possibly live up to what you've imagined. And maybe that's true, but sometimes, occasionally, meeting someone you idolize can change the trajectory of your life. Michael Haggerty's here with an example of just that. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Craig.
Photographer Fred Baldwin is who we're talking about here. He spent the last few decades living here in Houston. His work has been featured in Life magazine, Sports Illustrated, National Geographic. He and his wife founded the local photography platform and nonprofit PhotoFest. I guess none of this happens, though, unless Baldwin came face-to-face with his hero.
Yeah, when he was a young man, Baldwin was kind of struggling to find his direction in life. He had been kicked out of a number of schools, spent some time in the Marines, even pursued writing for a career, but that didn't work out, and he had pretty much made up his mind to give up and settle down and just get any old job. But before he did that, he tells me he had kind of a crazy thought.
I'm going to go and see my imaginary father, Pablo Picasso. Well, there was one small problem. I had no training in art. I didn't know anybody who knew Pablo Picasso, and there was no reason he could possibly think of in a million years on why he needed to see me.
And you refer to him as your imaginary father.
It was my imaginary father, and I can tell you why. Picasso, with his art, controlled his own life. He lived in the south of France. He created out of himself a way of living, and he evolved and re-evolved and re-evolved again. I wanted to see how it might be possible to learn how to do something like that.
You want to learn from the man himself?
Learn from the man himself, except I had no excuse to go and see him. But I went to Paris, and then I figured out where he lived finally, went and rapped on his door, knocked on his door, and couldn't get in. But then the concierge told me that he might be in tonight. I went back. I couldn't get in. The next day was the same story over and over again. And after about 3 days of this, I was running out of money and sleeping in my car on his doorstep. And I figured, oh my God, this is ridiculous. This is. I'm making a fool of myself. I'm bothering this man. And how can I possibly? I'm going to give it one last chance, one last shot. And I purchased a book of his drawings in Paris. And I began to look at these drawings, and I realized that Picasso had this wild sense of the ridiculous. You could see it in his drawings, these ego-driven fantasies that were also very funny to me. So I realized Picasso has a wild sense of the ridiculous. And there's a wildness in him that I can see in these drawings. So I said, the only way I can possibly get in is to do something that's as crazy as something he might imagine. And what is the craziest thing I can possibly do to get his attention? So what I did was I drew and I wrote him an illustrated letter with my own drawings in it. And it basically was a very funny letter. And I drew a picture of myself sleeping in the car. I drew a picture of myself. I said, bientôt je les hommes Moez. I'm going to look like Moses pretty soon. And I drew a picture of myself on the first day, on the second day, and my beard down to my waist. And then I said, if I can go to Florence, where I have some money, I can shave my beard off. And I drew a picture of myself shaving my beard off, standing in front of the Duomo in Florence. I sent this letter in. 2 minutes later, this young woman came to the door. It wasn't the concierge anymore. And she said, "Où est l'Américain?" I said, "I'm the American." And she said, "Come in. Picasso wanted to see my beard." I didn't have a beard. So I explained to him that I had an imaginary beard, and it was very, very long. And he started laughing, and he thought that was very funny, and he said, "You can spend the day here."
Wow.
So I started taking pictures with a camera that I didn't know how to operate. And as a result of this meeting, when I left after that day, my ego in 4 days. First, you have to have a dream, which is to see Picasso. Secondly, you have to use your imagination, which is to write him a letter with your illustrations. Thirdly, you have to overcome your fear, and I was scared to death. I was setting myself up the most ridiculous fall I could possibly imagine. But the fourth point was the important one. You have to act. And so when I graduated from Columbia, I knew I could do anything that I wanted to do if I followed this mantra. So I decided to become a photographer, a journalist, and to travel the world. And appropriately, Picasso, I taught myself this lesson. He didn't teach me, but in scaling this mountain, this emotional mountain that I had there in my mind, I was able to get to the top of what I needed to get to, and that's where the book came from.
Yes, that experience with Picasso really set you, emotion gave you a lot of tools to use, and that kind of led you around the world, all these experiences shooting photos, and then you encountered the civil rights movement. There's a lot of fascinating images from that time that you took. Is there one maybe that stands out to you still all these years later?
Yes, there is. There is one, actually. Martin Luther King is sitting, looking very reflective. He's sort of sitting in a chair, looking a little relaxed and vague, and sort of thinking about things. He's about to make a speech in the Civic Auditorium in Savannah, Georgia. And I think he may have been thinking about what he was going to talk about. It's very reflective. It's an unusual picture of him. Usually the photographs of Dr. King are dynamic and some. This is reflective. And that's the reason I really like it so much.
What goes through your mind in a moment like that as you're trying to photograph someone? A lot of your stuff is very journalistic like that, capturing a moment as it happens as opposed to a posed portrait or something. So yeah, what goes through your mind as you're trying to capture something like that, to maybe capture them authentically and not make your presence so known that you distract them or they behave unnaturally?
Well, normally what I found that I did, sometimes I had to plan photographs. But in a lot of cases, what I was really waiting for was some point of human revelation in terms of the character of the person I was photographing. And it wasn't a sort of an art shot with light, and it wasn't an Ansel Adams, it wasn't a Avedon, it was much more, it was really a trigger shot. It was something, and with a Leica, you had 36 chances to do it.
That's the camera you
use. That's the camera I use. And very often, what you find is that you're listening, you might be actually talking to the person, or you just might be reflecting, and suddenly there's a moment there that it occurs to you that's the moment. And you also miss a lot of shots. You're very lucky out of 36 pictures, if you get 5 or 6 that are good, you're way ahead of the game.
Wow.
Or ones that you were satisfied with. I didn't have a philosophical point of view, except I was extremely anxious to preserve the dignity of people that I photographed. That was very important to me.
So obviously you've gotten a lot of adventure, you've gotten to visit a lot of far-flung places and see a lot of fascinating people and interesting things happening, but what do you feel like this career so far, because you're still very, very active, this career so far in photography has given you in life?
What I have learned is the inalienable complexity of life, that we live in a world of distractions, and I think that there are deep and immutable things that are available in other people and in yourself. And what I did, this book took 10 years to write. What I found, that some of it drew from the diaries. I kept extensive diaries over the years. But some of it just drew up from something inside of me that I suddenly realized I knew. Moods and feelings, complexity, the fragility, endurance. In the Arctic, where I was almost killed 2 or 3 times just by being in the wrong place at the wrong time under the wrong circumstances, you are looking at a world that is so beautiful. The water is absolutely clear. You can see the fish. You can see the birds feeding on the fish. You see the seal plunging in after their meals, and then the polar bears and the whole thing. The whole cycle of life and death is very obvious and very clear and very beautiful. 5 minutes later, it can kill you. The wind changes, the weather changes. Suddenly you're in grave danger, and you thought you were in paradise 1 minute, and the next you're in hell. That's a very interesting thing to experience, and you learn from it.
That's Houston photographer Fred Baldwin. His new memoir is called Dear Mr. Picasso, An Illustrated Love Affair with Freedom. He spoke with our own Michael Haggerty. Baldwin will talk more about the book at an event Wednesday night at the Manil Collection. You can find more information and some examples of photos he mentioned at HoustonMatters.org.